Welcome to NDTI's podcast series, Talking Inclusion. My name's Drew Edwards and I'm joined today by Liz, who is Eleanor's mum. Welcome, Liz. If you could tell us a bit about your life and Eleanor's life and what you describe as her journey out of isolation.
Hello, everyone. My name is Liz Barraclough. I'm a mum of two children. One's called Eleanor and one's called Leonard. And Eleanor, about a month after birth, was diagnosed as having a profound and multiple learning disability. A long time ago now. What they neglected to mention in the diagnosis is that she's a very good singer. She's got a really, really good sense of humour. And she's a bit of a player. But at the time, we were told that she would never walk, she would never talk, wouldn't have much brain function, and I was bewildered by that a little bit. So I'm a teacher by trade, I work in a further education college, and although I had some awareness of people with learning disabilities, I felt like I was coming into a world that was quite alien, and it was very bleak at that point as well.
And why was it bleak?
I think because it felt like she'd just been born and everybody'd like written her life off. I was just told that she would like never work. And then we went through a lot of years of lots and lots of meetings and a lot of people measuring her, classifying her. It didn't feel very positive.
One of the things we're talking about today is about what your journey has looked like together to ensure that Eleanor's living has included a life as she would like to live. So. Mm-hmm. And particularly around education, what did that look like for you early on?
Well, I think early on she was very much into a special school. We were told that was the only place that people like her would go, so we weren't really given any choice. And so she went to school from the age of two, but I was just very aware of how isolated she was. And I think as well, from my point of view, I'd been brought up in quite an inclusive way. I'm one of a very big family. We live near London. We used to have people visiting from all over the world, just dropping in. And so I suppose I had those values of inclusion and just that kind of, you know, it was almost like, okay, if you need a bed for the night, you can have one. Might be on the floor. We might have to go and dig up a few vegetables to give you a meal, but you know, we'll sort it out. And suddenly being plunged into this world of separation, really, and isolation, her life, it wasn't the same as some of the other kids on the street. You know, she was picked up by a bus in the morning and taken to a different school from everybody else. She didn't seem to have those activities and make friends. And I knew that it was wrong, but I didn't really know what to do. It just didn't feel right to me.
So when did things start to change?
I did a leadership course called Partisan Policy, and that was when Eleanor was about six. And I suppose I'd already was having some misgivings or some frustrations about her life, but I didn't really know if there were any alternatives or what to do. What I found on the Partisan Policy Making course, some of the speakers were really inspirational, but also the information. I got introduced into person-centered planning. It seemed impossible when I first came across it and thought, what is this? But I also found out about rights. I found out about things like direct payments, what they were. So at the age of seven, Eleanor was the first child in our town to be awarded a direct payment. And that's specifically what we wanted, was really for her to have a social life. So at that point, although she doesn't use a lot of words, she has very weak muscles, so she often doesn't form words. She's a singer, she showed that she can learn songs. I also found that I was a bit of a barrier as well, because lots of people stare at her when we're out and about, and sometimes you just feel like shutting yourself away and just looking after your child and, you know, shutting the world out. I was meeting some of the disabled people on the course and listening to their experiences and thinking, well, actually, she's got to be there and I can't be with her all the time necessarily. So when I first moved up here, I joined the youth choir because I was a youth. I was 26. And they had like a reunion camp where lots of like ex-members would go and bring their kids. And I was really scared. I didn't want it to be a nasty experience for her, but I tried. And I think just being with people who had a shared interest in singing, the choir director there saying, bring her to the youth choir. All we ask is that the people like to sing. They don't even have to be any good at it, but she's good at it, so why not bring her? And I think some of the other kids also put my faith in other kids. It was like they wanted to look after her. They didn't laugh at her. They accepted her for who she was. So that also just, it almost was like a first step thinking, yeah, actually, there are people out there who want to help. And I also think in terms of community living, think about what links you have already, you know, and it might be a neighbour or it might be a hobby. It might simply be somebody down the corner shop where people want to help you, where you might be able to find shared interests, go to it and see. And at the end of the day, if it doesn't work, you can put that down to experience and maybe try somewhere else.
So in terms of education, what was Eleanor's journey like?
She started in a special school when she was two. She then started her, we call it her journey out of isolation. So it started really with her social life. She joined a local choir. She joined a local brownie pack. And that inspired us to think, well, actually, is where she's at, is this the best place for her in, educationally? And really we found that it wasn't. So because we'd had positive experiences through the direct payment, through meeting other young people, we started to then seriously look at mainstream schooling for her secondary school. So I probably started when she was about nine, and it took about 2 years of negotiation. I can always remember going to one of her meetings with the 16 people, all of whom said no, it wouldn't work, mainstream schools are not ready for somebody like Eleanor. And I brought along the assistant head of the secondary school that I wanted her to go into, and she just kept looking at me over the table, and she admitted to me two or three years after that she was really scared at that point, because she thought, I've offered a place to this young person and I'm all of these experts are saying how it won't work. But again, I did a lot of planning. I was very lucky to have some allies from the Alliance for Inclusive Education, from people that I'd met on the partners course. And I just sat down with my good friends as well from Movable Fee Starts. We just sat down and drew basically a big plan, a sort of map really. And I took that to the next meeting after this meeting of no. And the guy with the checkbook was there from the local authority. And I put this big sort of diagram on the wall and said, this is how we think it needs to work, and this is about friends, and this is about the support you'll need at school, and this is about the resources we already have. And everything I said he kept saying yes, and every time he said yes, the assistant head would write it down. And then I folded the plan up at the end of the meeting and I gave it to the school and I said, right, this is a plan. We don't know if it's going to work. What we need from you is honesty, is communication. And if we have to go back to the drawing board, but let's keep talking. I also wrote to the governors and thanked them. And it was lovely. The school let me sit on the interview panel for the inclusion assistant. And we just kept talking, trying things out. And what I found when Ellen was at the mainstream school was once she was there, she had like a curriculum that played to her strengths. But then other teachers started saying, well, oh, she can come to science. She can come to this lesson of science, but maybe not that one. She'll get a bit bored in that one, but this lesson definitely. So she was, and because she was maybe in different year groups doing different subjects, she did some French, she did some travel and tourism, she did music, but then the whole school got to know her. And I actually, one of my students a few years ago was a contemporary of her and remembers Eleanor, and it was like, oh, you're Eleanor's mum, sort of thing. So yeah, that was positive. And I think once she was there, we had a bit of luck. There was an educational psychologist student on placement, so she wanted to set up a circle of friends and see what that was like, and that stayed all her school life. She used to have lunch with these young women, and I think one of the things I found with the mainstream school, her curriculum expanded and the subjects that she could learn expanded, but she also very much identifies as a young woman, and mm-hmm. what she learned about being around other people, her interaction with boys and men, because if she got excited, she used to like lift a top up, and she learned not to do that, to be a bit cool. But it was just those sorts of rich conversations, and like an acceptance of that actually her disability wasn't the only thing about her. I don't think I'll ever know. I don't know exactly what Eleanor learns or how she learns. I know she does learn, and I know sometimes she can be very perceptive. But from my point of view, it's like, I don't know if you've ever heard of the least dangerous assumption, and it's like, let's just assume that Eleanor learns. I mean, I can remember once having a very interesting a conversation with people about, because Ofsted were in, Eleanor was participating in a lesson about sex education and sex, and they were just panicking a bit, you know, the school, do we have your permission? I said, look, I don't know what Eleanor learns, but I know that I'd much prefer her to have that information than to not have that information. So, you know, it is information that every young woman needs. It's life, you know, it's part of life, and she, therefore she needs to be part of that. I mean, some of the friendships, some of the experiences that she had, I think now she's 26 and she's so, as a teenager, we did have some challenging behaviour, both to others and to herself. That's once she got through puberty, a lot of that subsided, and I put a lot of that down to the grounding she got in a mainstream school, those ordinary experiences, being able to relate as a young woman first, not as a disabled young woman first, the interest in fashion, the how you interact with people, who you flirt with, who you don't flirt with. All of those very subtle things that we pick up at school, you know, very important. And then I also think the amount she then gave to others. We often meet people in town, people who went to school with, and there's again that acceptance that she's Eleanor, she's who she is. Which just helps things, you know, it sometimes just breaks down a few of those barriers and shows that she's, you know, a valued member of the community. And then again, I mean, one of her PAs was one of the choristers of the choir that she went to, and it's links again into community. Mm-hmm. I think schools are a very, very central part of any community. And so even, you know, there's lots of debates about special versus mainstream schools. But for me, mainstream was very positive for Eleanor, but also mainstream schools, I think, you know, if we're looking at positive discrimination, you know, there should be linking, there should be partnership work, purely because of the links that they have with the wider community.
Thinking of how that's all prepared her for adulthood, for being 26 and, you know, all the things that are to come, how have you seen that influence her life and the things that she's doing now?
Well, I think because sort of direct payments were well established, she'd been awarded her first direct payment when she was 7, and that helped her access social activities that she was able to do independently of the family. When she left school, we were set another dilemma in that, you know, a lot of further education is very qualification bound. I know because I work in it, and it's, you can't enter the next level sometimes if you haven't achieved a level 1 or level 2. We then were directed back to a special school, but they were full and didn't do flexibility, so that sort of cut that off. But in a way I was quite relieved about that, because I just thought, no, it wasn't having, if you like, embraced community life and inclusivity, it wouldn't have been the right place to put her then. And we certainly didn't want to look at residential. Again, it was about, she left school in 2011, and it was about the time that there were the Pathfinder authorities for the Preparing for Adulthood legislation that came in 2014. So, and we had a new checkbook holder, and they took the bold decision of actually looking at an individual budget for Eleanor post 16. So Eleanor's budget comprised of a social services component, a health component, and an education component. And so we decided to homeschool, but I also, using the individual budget, I employed a broker who'd done lots of plans for adults but had never really worked with a young person. And the reason I did that is I thought when I was 16, the last person directing my life would have been my mother. So I, you know, with myself and my husband, we just thought, you know, we need actually a broker. We need somebody who's sort of, if you like, advocating for Eleanor, not us, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So he did a lot of work. He went into the school, and I tell you what, teenagers are the best employment planners ever. They came up with 70 different jobs I thought Eleanor could do, because I think they're doing it themselves. They're deciding what they're going to do for the rest of their lives. And also because they've grown up with her, they didn't really have any of the hang-ups of you need to be able to speak to do that job or something like that. And they just came up with all of these ideas.
I was going to ask, was it the same group of children that she'd grown up with? So that was amazing. Yeah. They must have seen all of her strengths and knew what she would decide to get on with anyway.
So with the individual budget, we were homeschooling. Just basically played about with it. I mean, she went to sixth form college for a bit. She worked with the health and social care students. She has singing lessons with a local music school. We set up a team of personal assistants, and we very much hire personal assistants who share the same interests as Eleanor, but we've also written into the job description that also part of their job is to find activities that they think Eleanor would like to do and facilitate her inclusion in them. And I think that's one of the things that I've found with some of the PAs is, you know, they have links to the community as well. So they one of the PAs at the minute, she has 2 children and they call Eleanor Auntie Eleanor, and there's a whole little world of activities and friendship and community with those children's peer group and things. Also, one of them takes her to the swimming world and she meets and greets people there, and it's just that.
So she's still got really active, fun stuff going on.
Yeah.
And what are her aspirations for the future years?
Who knows? we obviously, some of the stuff that we do, like swimming, is really important because she uses a wheelchair all the time now. She needs to be active, and she goes to a drama group twice a week, Movable Feast, that are an inclusive drama group. Just completely get work with, start with what the person can do, build on that. But continue really as we are. She's continuing to live at home with us. But as I say, she's out and about 5 days a week. She also goes on holiday with her PAs, so they often just sort of sort that out. What she's going to do next is she used some beach wheelchairs in North Shields, and some of her PAs, it's amazing. If you've ever, if anybody doesn't know what a beach wheelchair is, just find out about them, because it means that you can go on the beach, basically. It's fab. I think her next step will be to volunteer and help administer the beach wheelchairs. One of the things I found when she first got her individual budget, it just kind of allows you to explore. It lets you think, right, she likes this, but she doesn't like that. And sometimes even the stuff she doesn't like helps you understand what she likes, if you know what I mean. So
yes,
we'd normally try an activity for about 6 weeks. If she really wasn't into it, then we'd stop it. But
yeah,
again, somebody, you know, was it too quiet? She was a bit bored with it. There weren't enough people. Do you know what I mean?
I absolutely do. Yeah, my son is the same. That, you know, and has been like that with his activities and his working life. Is he wants to try something before he knows whether or not he wants to do it. And I don't think that's a bizarre request. I think that's perfectly normal to want to do.
Yeah.
To give it a go first.
Look for stuff that's already there that perhaps you can adapt to suit that person's needs, rather than think, oh, I've got to set something up. Or, and also, ultimately, you know, people leave school. That, you know, I'm not at school, I'm at work. I hate sport. It's like, if you put me in a club where I had to do sports all day long, I'd hate it with a passion. On the other hand, I sing, I knit, I sew,
I spoke to, you've probably met Stera, because her poetry and her talking about tandem rides and all sorts of other things.
Yeah.
There's a huge variety of stuff out there to do, but you've got to try it first. And just see whether it works. So,
and not worry if it doesn't work. Because if it doesn't work, you just, it's like anything that we've ever done. If we've done an activity and we thought, I'm not doing this again, you just wouldn't do it again. Mm. But you'd try it first. And just because something hasn't worked doesn't necessarily mean it's a failure. It's knowledge. So let's now explore something else. But being part of the community, you know, being with people. I used to sometimes worry when she left school, because she'd had such a wide circle of friends, and I thought, is that gonna, you know, continue? But actually it did, and it's just different ages, different walks of life. But again,
and that's the same for everybody.
Yeah,
when we leave school, that is actually very similar to, you make friends with the people around you, wherever that might be, you know. And it's brilliant that she's had the opportunity to, probably more than many other people of her age, to actually go out and find people in the community doing things that she wants to do, rather than just being restricted to what's on offer in school. Because you've had a commitment to find things that she's interested in in the community, which is amazing. Yeah,
and also I think with our PAs, once we had a good team of PAs around her, they took that mantle and ran with it. For me, the key thing is communication. So from time to time, about once a year, we have a big staff meeting, and we'll, you know, it's about making sure that lines of communication are open. If people are unhappy about anything, that they talk about it.
And I think what's really interesting for me, and we all have to bring it to a close, but what's really interesting for me is that you've shown really good communication and how important that is right from the get-go. Mm-hmm. Right from the moment that you went in and took a plan into the education system and said, this is how it could all work and let's talk about this, through to now. And those are things that everybody, including Eleanor herself, will have taken on board. Those are skills that they would have learned. Mm-hmm. And that strengthens the care and support that Eleanor has, but also the opportunities that she has, all due to really good communication and being open and honest. So
I think what I also want to say, Drew, is just I've also had some amazing support and friends and people I can phone. And I think, but again, it's about having a bit of a vision of what is a good life for Eleanor, what's a good life for the person you care for. And as long as you're kind of going in that direction, it's okay. You might not be there yet. And unfortunately, a lot of the world that we're in is the opposite. It's saying, what can't the person do? What's wrong with them? And it's just sort of switching that around a little bit. And let's think about, you know, what can Eleanor do? What does she like?
Thank you so much for that. That's been a brilliant conversation and I'm sad to bring it to a close. I hope that you can join us for our next instalment of Talking Inclusion in 2 weeks' time. Thank you.